Oh, snap.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet. Hi, everybody. It's Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the top dog at Raw Dog Food and Company, where, yes, friends don't let friends feed kibble. Got a great show for you today. I'll be talking with the cancer vet, Miss Judy Jasek. So you're going to love this podcast. Remember that you can find all of our preferred providers, and they can be contacted via phone. You can do a phone consult no matter where you are in the country, or you can see them in person here in Colorado. Just go to rawdogfoodandco.com. Scroll down on our menu to the Raw Education tab, and then there you will see our preferred providers. You will also see our top consultant, Neely Piazza, who you can work with. If you're just starting a species-appropriate diet, if you're using someone else's food, if you're cooking your food, whatever you're doing, we can help you here at Raw Dog Food and Company. Also, I want you to take a look at our supplements page. Oh my gosh, we have so many great supplements. And I want to say this. Listen, your dog has got to have some omega-3s. What are omega-3s, right? Well, the omega-3s are in fish. They're in fish oil. We don't particularly love fish oil, but here's my ranking. Fatty fish. The fatty, oily fish are your first line of omega-3s. So you can find that in trout. You can find it in sardines. That's a whole food, right? So we'd love to go there first. How do you feed those? Frozen or raw? Either way, whatever your pooch desires. Then the next thing is I've got phytoplankton on my website. It's called Phytosynergy by Adored Beast. Oh my gosh, this stuff is great. If your dog's not a lover of fish, or here's the real key, if your dog is sensitive or allergic to fish, yes, you can do phytoplankton. It is a whole food, okay, not a supplement. Just sprinkle it on their food. It's amazing. Go to my supplement site. The next one in that category is going to be the calamari oil. It's a veterinarian-grade calamari oil. Doesn't smell like fish. Even our pickiest eaters love this calamari oil. And you know what? You can eat it too. You can take it too. People and pets. That's right. Get your omega-3 right here at Raw Dog Food and Co. All right. Well, you know, we always start out all of our shows with our testimonials, and I have got one that I've got to read to you today. This is from Justin here in Colorado. All right. So let me read to you what Justin said. He says, to start, my dog is a German Aussie Shepherd mix. She was born with a very severe heart condition where her heart only developed one main artery instead of two in the womb. The first year and a half of her life on kibble was filled with constant trips to the vet. She would lose consciousness, collapse, and even her bones and tendons were so weak, we spent half of her second year of life in physical therapy. I finally decided it was time to do something different and give you guys a call. You told me how to deal with her pickiness using tripe blends and suggested I supplement her heart for CoQ10 to strengthen her heart. Real heart is what he's talking about. Your PMR blends for additional calcium and protein and completely get her off kibble. That was September of last year, and now we're in April. I've only had one visit due to a physical injury, but her bones and tendons have strengthened to the point she can run and not limp. Her heartbeat is not only more rhythmic now, but it's much stronger and more pronounced. It used to be you couldn't hear her heart over her breathing, but now it's clearly there, even with a highly severe murmur. She still runs out of breath and has to take breaks while playing fetch, but she hasn't collapsed or gone unconscious for several months, and that alone is worth every penny. Justin goes on to say, I got pretty teary writing this because her quality of life was just so awful before, but you guys have really helped her fill her potential as a shepherd, even with her disability, and I can't thank you enough. I love those testimonials. And I got to tell you guys, we see this all the time, all the time. So I don't understand why vets haven't gotten on board yet. You just got to get them off the offending foods. And I want to say one other thing before we get started today. I don't know why certain dogs would have an issue on the raw diet. Because in our raw diet, it is only species appropriate. That means that it's only the protein. It is only the bones. It is only the organs. It is only the fat. In some blends, we might have tripe. In some blends, we might be using chicken feet for the bone source. But what I'm saying is that these are animal parts that are species appropriate for a dog. And if your dog is not able to digest this type of food, then we have to look at what's going on with your dog. Does it make sense to you that your dog would do better on a highly processed, dry, synthetic-filled food? That doesn't make any sense to me. Kibble was made for convenience. It was made to get rid of excess low quality products and pieces. They found a way to feed it to dogs, and now we've got over a 50% cancer rate and obesity in dogs and cats. So what I'm saying is, if your dog is throwing up or not being able to digest the raw diet properly, then something's going on with your dog and we need to look further. Okay, many times the raw diet is going to reveal a bad gut in your dog. Maybe it's got some issues from over vaccines or medications. Maybe it's the dog flu going around. There are so many different reasons, but I promise you this. There is not a dog out there that shouldn't be eating a raw diet. I don't see it. It doesn't make sense. Yes, they may not throw up on kibble. Why? Well, what do they really have to digest on kibble other than sugar? There's really nothing in there. There's no real bone. There's no real protein. Not too difficult, right? All right. Well, today we are going to talk with somebody who knows a lot about cancer in pets. Dr. Judy Jasek is our guest today. Dr. Judy's decision to specialize in caring for cancer patients stems from the dramatic increase she has seen in cancer cases, both in her pet patients and in the people in her life. She is wholly committed to making a contribution that minimizes the prevalence of this devastating disease. Using the knowledge she's gained over her 30-plus years of practicing veterinary medicine, Dr. Judy has developed a unique whole-body approach to both treating and preventing cancer. She looks at the whole animal and supports the natural healing ability of the body with proper nutrition. Yes, Dr. Judy is also a raw feeder. She supports the natural healing ability of the body with the proper detoxification, and she helps eliminate the underlying causes of the disease. She then uses tools, some very out-of-the-box tools that are having great success, such as ozone therapy that we're going to talk about on some future podcast. She uses herbs, CBD, oil, essential oils, whole food supplements. She does many, many things to optimize the health of the body and to help it eliminate the disease. So Dr. Judy Jasek, welcome to the Raw Dog Food Truth Podcast.
Thank you, Dee Dee. I'm very excited to be here and get the word out. And hopefully start helping pets be a whole lot healthier.
Dr. Judy, what we want to talk about today, though, is something that just came out in the news not too long ago, is this vitamin D toxicity in pets. And this stemmed from the Hill's recall, 8 brands of dog food that was recalled. You know, it's just amazing that we entrust our pets, right, to veterinarians. You're a veterinarian. A lot of veterinarians today are coming out with this anti-raw dog food policy. And yet we find that this Hill's diet, this prescription diet, has toxic levels of vitamin D. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this is a perfect example of why we need to be feeding a fresh whole food diet. Because when we're feeding whole foods, nutrients come in a balanced form. Nutrients are never meant to be given solely. You know, I am not at all a believer in supplementing individual elements, vitamins and minerals, except in some, you know, very specialized cases. If we know there's a deficiency, I look at supplementing nutrients in their whole food form, because all nutrients are meant to be consumed with other nutrients that they work synergistically with. They don't work very well alone. And what happens in the commercial dog foods that are highly processed, and whether it's Hill's or any of the other brands out there that are making your typical dry food kibble or canned food, these foods are so highly processed that any nutritional value that may be present in the ingredients gets processed out, can even become toxic in some cases. And so to make up for that, they literally just spray a vitamin and mineral supplement on at the end after all of the processing. Well, how easy would it be to miscalculate, give a little more vitamin D than they're thinking they're giving, or they're giving the vitamin D without the other nutrients that it's meant to be given in, or it's not given in a biologically available form. Our bodies use vitamin D3, which is that's a form of vitamin D that's naturally found in animal products. So if we're feeding fresh meat and organ meat and fat, especially, it's especially prevalent in the fat, they're going to be getting vitamin D3. The more common supplement is vitamin D2, which isn't even available to the body. And when we give nutrients in a synthetic form, we have no idea if the body can even assimilate and utilize those nutrients and what's happening once it gets into the body. It's sort of a crapshoot.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people don't even understand what vitamin D is meant for. And I think we see a lot of these supplements out on the market and we say, oh, well, I'm hearing that my dog needs vitamin D, so I'm just going to grab this supplement and I'm going to add it to the food. How dangerous is that?
Oh, it can be quite dangerous. Again, if you're not giving it with other nutrients that it's meant to be given with, you can throw the body out of balance. And vitamin D can be stored in the body. It can reach toxic levels. It's a fat-soluble vitamin as opposed to water-soluble vitamins like your B vitamins. If too much of those is taken in, then they pretty much can be excreted in the urine. But vitamins like vitamin D cannot be. And to your point, I do think it's a good idea to measure. It's a vital nutrient. And actually, before this came out, you know, we do see deficiencies in vitamin D as well. And so actually doing a blood test to, you know, to measure the vitamin D, find out where your pet is at, is very important. You don't just start throwing supplements. And I think that's so common, especially with, you know, the internet. You know, you go out there and read, oh, vitamin D is good for my pet, let me get him on some vitamin D. But it's super dangerous if you don't know where your pet is at.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think there's a lot of bad information. Let me just give you an example. So Channel 7, Denver, Channel 7 contacted me and they wanted to come out and do an interview about fresh raw diets for dogs. And I asked them, I said, why are you doing this interview? And Annie Taylor said, well, because we saw in the AP poll that this is really becoming a big thing, fresh raw food. And we see that you're one of the experts in this industry. So we want to come out and interview you. Well, when they actually aired the interview, I was so upset and upset from this reasoning. They put none of the real benefits of the raw diet. They angled their interview in regard as a financial piece. And they went in and they interviewed a vet who was standing in front of KD prescription diet bags. And he said, don't waste your money. Kibble actually cleans dogs' teeth and kibble is great for dogs. And then they didn't even list the benefits about a fresh raw diet. They said, okay, well, this prescription diet is $35 a bag, which I would say, what bag is that? You know, a commercial raw diet is $75, and they didn't even say our name, but they used our pricing and they said 20 pounds of, you know, a chicken blend is, you know, $60. So I was just, I was baffled. And, you know, our entire community was up in odds and up in, you know, they were not happy at all because we don't feel like we were represented correctly. And of course, being a vet, people expect that the vets know better. But I was shocked that he would even say something as silly as kibble cleans a dog's teeth. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, that's old, well, I would even call it a wives' tale at this point. I don't even know how it got started. I think it got started with the Milk-Bone thing. Remember, I don't know if you remember the old Milk-Bone commercials and the dog with the little shiny star on his teeth after he eats the Milk-Bones, and that's what, you know, cleans the teeth. But I equate that to, you know, how do your teeth feel after you eat something like a pretzel? You know, you got all this stuff stuck to your teeth. Your teeth don't feel clean. And raw food is the best thing in the world to keep dogs' teeth clean because it has a natural scrubbing action, especially if they're eating some bone in the food or bones like chicken necks, chicken back, wings, things like that, that they actually crunch through. It's the best toothbrush in the world. It exercises the teeth and gums. Plus they're getting the nutrients in those bones that their body needs to keep the teeth healthy. So that is a perfect example of the propaganda that is literally fed to the, you know, veterinary profession, pun intended, by these big dog food companies. And it does not surprise me at all that that is their slant, because these companies, Hill's, I think, is owned by even a larger corporation now. There's only a couple of big corporations like Mars and, you know, Procter & Gamble that own the whole, like, commercial, mainstream pet food industry, like Hill's and Royal Canin. And they have an agenda, and they're powerful. And it doesn't surprise me at all, because probably behind the scenes, somebody paid to have that message put out there to make raw look bad and to promote these prescription diets, because that's the way the game is played. And literally in vet school, I mean, I talk to like young veterinarians, new graduates these days, and I ask them, you know, what kind of training do they get in nutrition? And it's no different than what I got in vet school, which was 35 years ago. That you're trained to sell these prescription diets. Literally, you don't get sound nutritional information. These companies, they fund research. They, you know, make donations to the vet schools, and the whole game is that they're training the veterinarians to sell these foods. So that's the only information that the vets get, unless they're willing to step out on their own, and that's what I did, and look at other options. Because to me, I got to where, well, just look at the ingredients on these bags. Like, this can't be healthy. If you just read the ingredients and say, well, we're feeding a carnivore, how can this possibly be healthy? And then you start to investigate, other options. And I learned over time the benefits of feeding raw. And I saw it, with my own eyes. I've been practicing long enough that I don't need somebody to show me a research study that proves to me that raw is healthier than these commercial diets, because I've seen it in my own practice. I've seen my patients get healthier and thrive. I've been open to learning from my clients. I would have clients come in that was feeding raw, and I'd ask them what they were doing because their dogs look so great. I'm like, well, I'm going to learn from the people that are doing it. You have to be open to learning a new way. And unfortunately, that's just not encouraged in the profession. There's this kind of paranoia around stepping outside the box and practicing in a way that goes against how veterinarians were trained in vet school.
So what happens, Dr. Judy, if you're not out on your own, if you're in a clinic? What happens if you are a vet who was pro-raw, but no one else is pro-raw? What happens to you as a new vet student if you go in? Are you just totally silenced? Are you scared to death? And if you're scared to death, what are you scared to death of? Losing your license?
Yeah, that's a tough situation. And I've talked to many veterinarians that have ended up in that situation, especially young vets. You just get out of vet school. You don't want to go and figure out how to start running your own business. You want to find mentorship in this area. So it is really tough. And yes, they sometimes do need to comply with practice policy, or they would lose their position, first of all. I think there is a fear about not practicing what's called quote unquote standard of care. So there's, what the veterinary state boards and the AVMA, which is the American Veterinary Medical Association, puts out there what they consider standard of care. And I believe the AVMA a number of years ago made a statement, against feeding raw. And so veterinarians do feel there is that fear of, oh my gosh, if I don't practice what's considered standard of care, I could lose my license. And in the, their immediate environment, if they're going against the policies of the practice where they're working, then they would risk losing their job. And that's what's, kept me out, as an independent entrepreneur, because for me, once I realized that there was a better way to treat pets that would help the pets be healthier, and I saw it with my own eyes, I mean, for me, there's no going back. I mean, if the state board comes and takes my license because I'm practicing in a way that I believe in, then, so be it. But I couldn't live with myself if I was practicing in a way that I didn't believe was the absolute best for my patients.
Yeah, I'm shocked that they could actually come and take your license when, in fact, we've got these pills, these prescription diets, we have these vitamin toxicities. This isn't the first recall that we've had. And yet we see that obesity, we see that cancer is on the rise. And I am so shocked that I don't even know how to describe it. It's such a punch in the gut when we truly want to trust these health professionals, and yet they say some of the stupidest things that I have ever heard, and I hear it day in and day out from people that contact me, and they're telling me what their vets have told them to do. And I'm in a precarious position as well, because I don't want to diagnose. That's why we have our preferred professionals yourself that actually do have some experience with raw. Now, we do have some preferred professionals on our site who don't have experience with raw. Maybe they're not feeding raw themselves, but they will send their patients over. And in certain situations where there is, in quote unquote kidney disease, which I want to ask you about. If you had a dog that had some kidney issues, okay, and you could even call it kidney disease, would you have them on a raw diet or would you have them on a prescription kidney disease diet?
Well, I don't ever recommend prescription foods anymore. I mean, I haven't for years because I think they're so void nutritionally that I feel like I'm doing a disservice if I put dogs on those. So I would definitely recommend a raw food diet. I think that especially when we have kidney issues, and the other thing about my approach is, you know, I don't treat conditions or symptoms. I look at the whole pet and what's going on with them. And definitely the diagnostics are important. The lab work, seeing, you know, where are our kidneys at? Because what I see a lot too is pets, they're diagnosed with quote unquote kidney failure. And I look at their blood levels and like, these blood levels hardly concern me at all. You know, sometimes. So I look at the level of elevation. And then my philosophy is that the most important thing is the quality of the protein. So the reason I don't like the prescription diets is they're grain-based. They're full of grains, which are pro-inflammatory, toxic. By the time they're processed, they're, you know, pesticide-ridden. They're genetically modified. It's just the worst possible thing you could feed anybody, especially a carnivore. So you have this really poor nutrition. So any protein in there is coming from such a poor source. And yeah, if you feed less of that poor quality protein, they probably will do better. But you're not giving them the nutrition they actually need. They need high quality meat protein for the kidneys to be healthy in the first place. You're not even supporting the natural function of the organs by feeding these prescription foods that are supposed to, you know, help them heal from this. So I like to feed, you know, high quality protein and the moisture content. To put an animal with any sort of urinary tract condition on a dry food, that's negligent in my opinion. They have to be well hydrated and they're meant to get their moisture from their food. Dogs and cats are meant to eat a diet that's, you know, 70% moisture, like a fresh food diet. They are not meant to eat kibble. It's hard on the body. It's hard on the digestive system. And it's hard on the, you know, the system that regulates the, you know, the water management system in the body. It keeps the body at certain levels of hydration and is used to excrete things that don't belong in the body. But if the animal is not properly hydrated, that system won't work. And especially cats. Cats are not by nature big water drinkers. And if they don't get the correct amount of moisture from their food, I think a large number of cats actually go through their lives marginally or more than marginally dehydrated. And they end up with kidney disease, which is what a lot of cats pass away from. So it's the quality and the moisture content. We still need to look at a balanced diet. So, you know, I of course don't recommend home prepared meals as a general rule, because I think it's really hard to create a good balanced diet. And by the time you get well sourced ingredients and get all the ingredients and put them together, I don't think you save any money and you got a whole lot more time invested. It's just so much better to get a prepared blend. And then again, I look at the pet. Are there, you know, certain things about that pet that we need to be paying attention to? Maybe they need, you know, a little more organ meat, a little less organ meat, a little more fat, a little less fat. We can tailor it to the pet. And then we definitely continue to monitor. So it's not like I would take a pet with some elevated kidney values and say, yeah, I'm on a raw diet and see you later. We monitor those values. And if we see them starting to go up, then we look at, okay, maybe we need to tweak. Maybe we need to you know, get some ingredients that are, if our phosphorus is going up, we need to get some, you know, ingredients that are lower in phosphorus. We look at the animal, but I would say in my experience, for the most part, once the animal is on a diet that they were meant to eat, unless we are in, you know, a severe state of decline already for whatever reason, most of them will stabilize. And the blood values are a little different. We'll sometimes see the kidney values go up just a little bit on a raw fed diet. I mean, up out of the normal range that the laboratory will say is normal, because those normals are based on pets that are fed your typical dry food diet. So I watch and see where the levels go. And if they go up a little bit, but then stabilize, and the animal is feeling good. I mean, that's the other thing. How's that dog or cat acting? Are they playing? Do they have good energy? Do they dive into that food bowl and love to eat, and their stools are normal? I mean, really, really, you know, we have to look at the whole picture, because ultimately for me, the quality of life of my patients is that's the bottom line. They get a little bit, their kidney values are a little bit elevated, but they're going hiking on the weekends and they're eating well and everything else is good. I'm going to continue to monitor those, but I'm not going to get, you know, super excited about it or put them on a bunch of medications that are, is just more for the, even you're just giving the kidneys more things to eliminate from the body. So I don't think it's warranted to, you know, throw a bunch of, medications at them. I do have some herbs that I use for kidney support, that can help. But I think we need to look at the whole animal and look at what's going on with them. And that the foundational diet principles for me don't change a whole lot from animal to animal.
Yeah. And what about, since you are the cancer vet, there are a lot of people that come to me and say, my vet said I can't do a raw diet because my dog is going through chemo or my dog has cancer, so they're immune compromised. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I don't believe that either. First of all, when a dog or a cat eats a raw food diet, the pH in their stomach drops very low. So it's very acidic. They have hydrochloric acid in the stomach, which is what helps begin the digestion process of the nutrient, starts to break things down. And when a dog is fed a kibble diet, that pH will sometimes come up. So they're actually more susceptible to getting bacterial infections, or that the bacteria are not killed when they enter the stomach. When you have a pH of 1 or 2, which is what a dog on a raw food diet should have in their stomach, first of all, it's going to kill any bacteria that happens to enter that doesn't belong there. They're meant to handle that. Dogs are natural scavengers. Their bodies are designed such that they could go out and eat roadkill and they should be fine. This is another reason why I don't really promote home prepared meals, is that the commercial raw foods like your company and others out there are so highly scrutinized, and I'm sure you can attest to this, that you're being watched and tested and your products have to be clean. And I think, you know, they're much cleaner, I think, than even going in to the grocery store and buying meat. If people were to do a home prepared meal, because those foods are meant to be cooked, they're assuming they're going to be cooked, so they actually can have a little bit more surface bacteria on them. But again, we need to be supporting, you know, to say, okay, a pet has cancer and so they're immunocompromised. Yeah, that's probably true. Well, what are they eating? So if I get a pet to come see me that has a cancer diagnosis and they're eating kibble, like, well, that diet is not supporting them nutritionally, or their immune system would be strong enough to eliminate those cancer cells. So we have to support the immune system. And there's just, there's no better way to support the immune system than fresh, whole food. Again, it goes back to what I said before, that the basic nutritional principles don't really change from animal to animal. I just make, you know, adjustments based on a given animal's specific needs.
I think the biggest scare, the one that I hear over and over and over again, and the one that the FDA is always going after people on, is salmonella. And you cannot get anyone to say the actual bacteria load that it would take for a dog to get sick from salmonella is what? And then the second thing is, well, I'm not really talking about a dog. I'm talking about people. And I'm thinking, okay, how is it that I know no one that has gotten sick from salmonella? I've never gotten sick from salmonella, and I've been doing 20 years. If it was so prevalent, wouldn't we see a ton of people getting sick?
Yeah, you would think so. You would think so. And that's just paranoia propaganda that's put out there. I mean, I have heard that over and over and over again. I actually would tell my clients if they were going to go in to see a specialist or, you know, like they, you know, sometimes have to go into the ER for one reason or another. And I would just tell them, you know, it would probably make your life easier if you just don't tell them that you're feeding raw, if they're a raw feeder, because then the raw is automatically blamed. It wouldn't matter what was wrong with the pet. It'd be like, oh, well, you're feeding that raw food. So of course you can just expect that your pet's going to get sick, and automatically without even any testing. And to me, this doesn't even come close to good medicine. Is without even any testing. Oh, well, they're eating raw, so I'm sure your pet, you know, they go in with diarrhea. Well, you're eating raw, I'm sure your dog has salmonella. Like, well, we haven't even tested it. Like, you have anything to prove that? And, you know, chances are it's not, doesn't have anything to do with the raw food. It's some other, you know, some other cause. Or, yeah, this paranoia that, oh my gosh, my dog eats raw, so then if my dog comes and, you know, licks my face, I'm going to get sick and, you know, die. It's really ridiculous. It's laughable in my opinion. This stuff that just, it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, the majority of people cook meat for their family. So, okay, you're bringing raw chicken and hamburger into your kitchen and preparing it for your family. Are you dropping dead of salmonella? You know, you're handling raw meat all the time if you're a meat eater, and the majority of people are. So why is that okay? But putting raw dog food in your pet's dish, you know, is like so toxic. It doesn't even, their claims just don't even make any sense. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they absolutely don't. And I had a customer, sweet, sweet woman, and she was just devastated because her daughter-in-law was getting ready to have a baby. And her daughter-in-law said, once I have this baby, if you continue to feed raw to your dogs, our baby's not coming over.
And, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So she was asking me, you know, what to do. And I said, listen, I can only present, you know, the facts as we see them, as we've experienced them, as we believe them. And then you got to do what you got to do, because sometimes you cannot change people's, you know, belief system, but that's a really tough situation, as is the therapy dogs that are out there.
Yeah.
Therapy dogs. And that's the whole reason that this anti-raw policy came around anyway, happened, you know, to be with pet partners who are the therapy dogs. They wanted to find out back in 2008, which mouth had the most bacteria. Was it the kibble fed dog? Was it the raw fed dog? Back in 2008, they found out that the kibble fed dog had more bacteria, had more types of bacteria as well. But somehow magically, when they got a $400,000 grant from Purina, they posed this question, should we have an anti-raw policy? And of course, that's how that came about. So I think a lot of people think that this anti-raw policy that's floating around in the, you know, in the vet world has some scientific basis to it. But in fact, it doesn't. All right. So here's what I want to ask you. I want to ask you about, you know, we have so many cancer dogs. A lot of dogs go through chemotherapy. They're going through the traditional cancer protocols. You don't use typical cancer protocols. Tell us what you would do if you had a dog that came to you today that they said, you know, I've got cancer and I'm trying to decide whether I should go through chemotherapy, what I should do. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of this. It's a lot of that. It's a lot of heartache. What do I do? What would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I get a really thorough history. So I find out so that I can get an idea, well, where did this come from? Because it doesn't just appear out of, you know, nowhere. There's a disruption in the metabolism in the mitochondria of the cells that allows the cells to mutate to begin with. And then there's a lack or deficiency of some sort in the immune system, that the immune system is not eliminating those abnormal cells because that's the job of the immune system. So I look at the first two big things I look at are nutrition. Nutrition's huge. I mean, I tell people all the time, if they do nothing else, we have to correct the nutrition. And again, that is a fresh food diet. And a lot of pets that I see are on kibble, not necessarily prescription, but kibble of some sort. And I don't think any of them are good. There isn't a single kibble I would recommend these days. Because they're so highly processed and they're so pro-inflammatory in the body. So we have a long discussion about diet. And I talk about vaccines, and that's a whole other topic. Maybe we can do a podcast on vaccines, because I think diet and over-vaccinating, inappropriate diets and over-vaccinating are the two biggest disease-causing agents in our pets. Hands down. So I can't undo what was done, but I want to find out, where is this pet at? Are they getting, you know, 7 vaccines every year and eating a kibble diet? Well, yeah, no wonder they have cancer. Like, so then I can educate people about, okay, we need to not be doing any more vaccinating and we need to correct the diet. So then we have, you know, we have cancer and if they've been into any conventional vets, they've been talked to about chemo and radiation. I don't ever recommend chemo in pets. I don't do the conventional therapies, and I just don't ever see good results with chemo. When pets go and get chemo, it destroys the immune system. And we need that strong immune system to help the body eliminate the cancer. I fully believe that the body can heal potentially, you know, from anything. I mean, it, you know, depends. My success rate, you know, a lot of times depends on what stage the disease is when I see the pet. But chemo is so, it's systemic. It goes everywhere in the body and it just destroys the immune system, which is what we need to be strong. For things like radiation, you know, I do have some clients, if we have a tumor that's growing and just, you know, it's inoperable and there just aren't any other options, sometimes some focused radiation, they will try that to see if that works. But usually those cases are cases where there's been multiple biopsies and one or more surgeries. And the more cancer has been, you know, messed with and manipulated, the lesser my chances are of having good results, because you just make it angry. I used to believe more in, oh, we've got a lump there, we got to go take it out. I don't believe that anymore, unless it's in a location where, say, it's keeping them from being able to urinate or something like that. Then you have to do something to shrink the tumor. But I look at it as that tumor is the tip of the iceberg. It's a symptom. It's the body saying, hey, we got a big problem here. And so I look at what's underneath that. What's brewing in that pet's body that we need to correct? Because if we just focus on that tumor, we're going to, and we go after it to, you know, we're going to kill the conventional philosophy is we've got this tumor, we got to kill that tumor. We got to kill those cancer cells. Well, at the same time, we're not addressing what the underlying causes are. And in a lot of cases, we are inhibiting the body's own ability to eliminate the cancer. So the modalities that I use, such as ozone therapy, which oxygenates the body, I recently added in biophotonic therapy, which I do in conjunction with ozone. So this is like a laser treatment for the blood. So I draw blood and I run it through a device that uses light to energize the blood cells, and it helps activate the immune system when the blood is reinjected. So I run the blood through this device, and then I ozonate it, and then I reinject it back into the pet. So they're getting this boost of oxygen and these energized blood cells, which can be very effective at helping with the immune system and direct anti-cancer effects, because cancer and any disease process, they thrive in a low oxygen environment. So anytime we're providing the body with more oxygen, we are going to create a healing environment. I recently started doing the focal therapy. So this is something that has a long history. And the things I'm doing, these are not new therapies. These are things that have been around for, hundreds of years, literally. They just got buried, it just got buried by big pharma, and they're not mainstream. In other parts of the world, therapies like this are used extensively. So that's where I get a lot of information from, is what is being used in other countries. In Europe, something like 80% of cancer patients will get mistletoe injections. And this is done sterilely. It's something that pet parents can do at home. It's subcutaneous, given underneath the skin. And though that has a powerful anti-cancer effect, I do recommend CBD. I like to have all pets with cancer on CBD, and plus CBD is, helps with many, many things. I do Chinese herbs. I like Chinese herbs for balancing the body. If we have imbalances, the Chinese, herbal medicine has been around for thousands of years, and there's some, practitioners that have worked with these ancient Chinese formulas for many decades and tweaked them so that they're specifically effective for dogs and cats. And so there's some really great formulas that I will sometimes add in. Again, it depends on the pet. I don't like to overwhelm the body with too much stuff or too many changes. Sometimes if the dog's eating kibble, I'll say, we need to get your dog on a better diet, step one, and let's get that adaptation made. And then we'll start adding things in, because if we're changing to a raw diet and then putting a bunch of herbs and all this other stuff in the food, dog's not eating well, does not like the food, or he doesn't like the other stuff. So these are the tools that I use, but I don't use all of this on every patient. Again, it's a case by case. It's a case by case decision. Other supplements, I really like mushrooms. I use a lot of medicinal mushrooms in my patients. I think all patients and people can benefit from adding mushrooms into their diet. Then there's things like turmeric, herbs that specifically are easy to give that can have tremendous anti-cancer effects. And I'm always out there looking. I'm always learning about new tools and things that I can integrate into my practice. And my focus is doing the things that nobody else is doing, not doing them just for that reason, but so that pet parents have these options available to them. And if I have a client that chooses to do chemo or radiation, I I will fully support them. I can do the same things and help minimize the side effects. You know, I will give them my opinion, but I will certainly, you know, support them in their choices. And the things that I do can also help minimize side effects if they choose to go the route of doing chemo and radiation. And, you know, I can still help support them in that. So I feel like I have a lot of really unique offerings and adding more all the time.
Yeah, I really feel that you align very well with our beliefs, our ideology, and how we would treat our pets. So we love to have you as our preferred provider, especially for pet cancer therapy. So just to remind our listeners, drjudyholisticvet.com is where you can get in touch with Dr. Judy. And listen, it's not just for pets with cancer, okay? Because Dr. Judy can really help you with your puppies and your kittens and really educate you on wellness programs and help you understand what is minimal vaccines, what do you need to do, what should you do, what might you think twice about doing as you are raising these young ones. So please go to drjudyholisticvet.com or at Raw Dog Food and Company, go to our Raw Education tab. Dr. Judy is on our preferred providers page. Dr. Judy, I so appreciate you coming on the podcast today. We are going to do more podcasts and with Dr. Judy. We want to talk to her about each of these individual cancer therapies and maybe have a day where you can call in and just ask Judy some questions. So Judy, thank you so much for being here today, and we look forward to talking with you more, and thank you for all you do in the world for pets.
No, back at you, Dee Dee. I appreciate what you guys do. It's awesome to have a resource like yours, because I like to recommend the raw diets and to have a place where people can go and get so many different options. It's a great resource for me and my patients, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast.
Well, you're welcome. Well, you know, here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business, and friends, don't let friends feed kibble.
Oh, snap, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.